Hello and welcome to Mohawks Meet the Team series, a podcast dedicated to the team behind creating the strategy title, Old World. We'll get to know more about the team and their work on the project.
This week, we're joined by David and Josh, who are both writers for Mohawk Games, and we learn about their childhoods growing up in Scotland and Great Britain, and so much more, so stay tuned. Welcome to the show, David.
Hi.
Our second guest is Josh. Welcome to the show, Josh. You might be able to tell I am outnumbered here by people who don't speak with an American accent. So it's great. I really like this. I'm always trying to mimic the Scottish and British accent. So I'm going to do my best not to let that rub off on me this episode. But we're going to start with you, Mr. Scotsman. I imagine since you're from Scotland, you grew up there. But could you tell me about your childhood a little bit?
Yeah, sure. When I was a child, I've done a dairy farm, actually. We had milk cows. And one of my youngest memories is being in a van, the back of a van, with a cow poking its head through the gap and trying to eat my jacket.
That was so unexpected. That's the most Scottish thing I've ever heard in my life. I don't know you couldn't do it. You know what? Show's over. That was awesome.
Great. Oh, well, thanks for having us.
Awesome. So where in Scotland did you grow up?
When I lived in the farm, it was in a place called Ayr, which is in not the very north, but the kind of upper west. But after that, when I was going to school and stuff, I lived in an outer village called Houston, which is near Paisley, actually probably the biggest city on the west side of Scotland.
Yeah, you know, we were talking before the show about how I know a lot of my European history from the game Europa Universalis 4, and we're going to talk about that here in a second because I understand you actually worked on some of these games. But it's funny you said Ayr because I actually know where that is. So you grew up there, and so what is life like in Scotland as a kid? Are you outside playing games a lot, or were you playing video games? I mean, how did that go?
I didn't really play video games until I was about 12, I think. We got a PC one day, just basically at random. And it had like some DOS games installed on it. I think it had the original SimCity. It's probably one of the first games I played. But before that, it was mostly just outdoors causing mischief in the woods and stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, that's kind of how my childhood went too. That's great. So you grew up, and I imagine at some stage in your life, you're like, I like writing because you're a writer now. So were you writing as a kid? Were you writing a diary or writing stories or something like that?
Not too much as a kid. I'm actually the oldest of six bars, so I used to tell stories to my younger bars sometimes, but I didn't really formally write until I ended up working at Paradox, which was when I was 25. But before that, when I was in high school, I used to want to work in video games, but I eventually concluded that was unrealistic, and I worked in tech support for a short time, and I went to university to get a degree in network engineering. And when I was about halfway through that, I got a notification from a person I knew on the Paradox forum to say, hey, Paradox are hiring, you should apply for that. I was like, well, that seems unagree, but yeah, I'll give it a shot. But it turned out I got hired and then moved to Sweden with almost no preparation and became a writer.
Yeah, nice. Well, so were you hired as a writer?
Yes. With both Paradox and Mohawk, the writing's also kind of semi-design, semi-technical profession as well, because we put the events together. It's a bit better at Mohawk because we have an event editor, but with Paradox, it was very much a kind of script and stuff in the text editor, and then writing the stories for that as well.
Gotcha. All right. So where did you end up starting with, like, you get hired by Paradox, and then what games were you starting to work on when you got there?
I started out on Victoria 2. They'd already been released, but I started out working on one of the patches. And then I was moved into the expansion team, and I made the DLCs for Victoria 2. I think the first one was A House Divided, and then also Heart of Darkness.
Wow, yeah, Victoria 2, which is pretty relevant now since they just announced Victoria 3. Is that a game that you're excited about?
I'm very excited about it, yeah. It's one of those games where Victoria 2 was so strange in some ways. Like, the whole market code was very much somebody made it and then left the company, and we just didn't touch it after that. So I'm hoping Victoria 3 can recreate that even without having the particular magic that Victoria 2 had.
Yeah, no, that's great. So, and then, like I said before the show, you were telling me about a lot of the games you were actually involved with at Paradox, and a lot of the big ones, right? So you said Europa Universalis 3 and you actually had some time with Stellaris and all these other ones. Could you tell us more about that?
Sometimes I forget which games I worked on, actually. It's kind of it's hard to keep track. So I started in Victoria 2, as I said, and then I did some of the expansions for Hearts of Iron 3. I didn't work on the first one, which was Semper Fi, but I did work on For the Morrowind and Their Finest Hour. What did I still do? I worked on Star Wars a little bit before it released, but I wasn't on the team for very long before I moved to Crusader Kings 2, and I did some of the DLCs for that. I started out at the end of Conclave. I worked on the Conclave patches, and then I was more or less the lead person on Reaper's Due and Monks and Mystic. I did a lot of design and writing and events for those. And then after that, I moved back to Star Wars. I worked on Megacorps, Rathoids, Ancient Relics, and Federations. Forgot one because I was working on Hearts of Iron 4 for a while before it came out as well.
Wow, yeah, great. What a great resume. So you're over there and you're still living in Sweden, right?
Actually, sorry, I have to go back to the previous question because I actually worked for a bit on Europa Universalis 4 as well. As I was talking about before the started, I made the Purple Phoenix pre-ordered DLC and also worked very briefly on Rights of Man.
Well, so how long did you stay with Paradox then?
Just under 10 years. It was 9 years and like 6 months, I think.
And then did you go straight from there to Mohawk?
No, it's actually kind of funny because at the end of 2019, I was kind of tired of working at Paradox and I thought maybe it would be nice to take some time off and travel a bit and also visit my family back in Scotland. But then, of course, COVID hit and there was no more travel.
Yeah, joke's on you, right?
Yep.
That's what you get for thinking you could take a break.
Exactly, yeah. There's no rest for the wicked.
Great stuff. So before we get into your time with Mohawk, I want to jump over to Josh for a moment. And Josh, I'd like to know where you grew up.
I grew up in a town called Rickmansworth, which is a commuter town just outside of London. No cows there, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't equate the... I'm sorry, it's... I don't know, I just... It's not
a... That's the standard of a good town.
It's exactly. Yeah. Well, so can you tell me a little bit more about what your childhood was like?
Yeah, so I grew up in this town, Rickmansworth, just outside London. So it's amazing being like so close to the city and kind of getting in, getting to go in and, you know, like go to museums and stuff. And then being in the countryside as well, kind of being able to go on walk like just from the front door. And so it's quite quiet, but in a really nice way.
What kind of things did you get into? Were you playing with friends a lot, or were you playing video games at an early age?
Yeah, so I was very much a Nintendo kid as a child. So I think Game Boy Color was my first console. I was very much in the Pokemon generation. So kind of grew up with Pokemon Blue. Another one called Dragon Warrior Monsters, which I don't want to be kind of the indie kid, but I think was the better version of Pokemon.
Uh-oh, controversy.
And yeah, I know games were kind of always part of my life growing up, really. We had primary school, we had Pokemon cards, was like a huge thing in the playground. I don't know if this was a thing everywhere or just in the UK, but loads of schools ended up banning them because they were getting like, you know, because we just spend their whole time playing Pokemon cards and the trading got so kind of vicious over people trying to get, you know, exclusive Charizards and stuff that they just ended up banning a lot of them. So I ended up making a alternative game called Mini Monsters, which probably broke so many copyright things, but kind of a combination of Pokemon cards and Yu-Gi-Oh! So I know Cuff from early on, Cuff, yeah, making games and playing them.
Awesome. Yeah, maybe you had a second, like an alternate history of being like a card game maker somewhere.
Yeah, I'd love to do board games as well at some point. I think like there's so much to learn from them in terms of game design.
Very cool. So have you lived in London your whole life then?
The majority, yeah. I moved for my undergraduate degree to Birmingham and then back down. And now I'm living in London for the last 5-6 years or so.
And growing up, did you have an interest in writing? Were you doing anything like writing fictional stories or anything like that? Or was that something that blossomed late too?
No, this is the first writing job I've done, really.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. So did you study writing at school or anything like that?
I very much came through the design route and history as well. So I studied ancient history for my undergrad degree and then game design for my master's.
Wow, so this is kind of like the perfect mashup for you then, coming to Old Worlds. I mean, having a historical degree as an undergrad and then, you know, having game design history. You know, that's so, I imagine, did you apply for the job or did they come find you? Because you seem like a perfect fit.
I applied for it. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like you said, at the time, I'd just finished. So after graduating from my MA, me and another guy, Sam Brown, started up an indie game studio with the two of us. So we were doing that for about 4 years. Yeah, so it's a studio called Three Knots, and we both were on the game design course at NFTS together, and we sat next to each other during the second year. We both did jobs around the uni as well, so we kind of worked on the front desk. There was a Costa coffee machine, which we kind of worked on refilling, and we worked on the bar together a lot as well. So it was kind of throughout the 2 years, we were just working a lot together and just really enjoyed each other's company. And then from sitting next to each other, kind of helped each other out loads and realised that we kind of had very similar ideas about games and like the potential of games as a storytelling medium to be able to create like real good in the world. So we left after graduating, we decided to set up a studio together and moved into London, into Brixton. We were living together and working together, which was very intense but fun. So we have worked on, it was 4 years, so quite a lot of different things. So it's kind of a mix of freelance work, working on like a number of prototypes. We did workshops with organizations and charities like the Wellcome Trust and BAFTA. It was an amazing time, a real intense learning period.
And is that still around today, or did you guys end up dissolving?
Yeah, so basically, sadly, because of COVID, it was just we ran out of time effectively. So we were both having to work on other jobs at the same time. So we had a combination of freelance through the studio, and then like I was also bartending, and like we were both doing advertising casting work. So with COVID, it just became untenable really to keep going. It's a real disappointment, but it's just one of those things, you know. We learn like so much, and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that with COVID and also being just, you know, a couple people trying to get an independent studio going, that it would be very difficult. Is that something you think you might want to revisit later?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is so tough. And, you know, throughout NFTS and talking to other people in indie games, like, you know, you hear stories about how difficult it is. But, you know, I think you've kind of got to go through it to, it's one thing being told something like that, but it's another thing actually doing it. And, you know, pitching games to publisher after publisher and, you know, trying to get financing. And there's like so much that goes into a studio outside of the creative work, which is one of the things which is so nice at the moment, is getting to, you know, focus back on game design and really kind of, zoom in and kind of focus on the craft as such for a while.
Very cool. I hope you can find it again.
Yeah, thank you. And then I saw the job opening for, it was actually the designer programmer role. I saw the opening and I was like, it's a strategy game, which I love. It's history. It's, yeah, working with Sauron. It's like all these things. It's like, there's no way I cannot apply for that.
So Josh, tell me a little bit about your passion for history. Like what brought you to history and why did you end up getting a degree in it?
I mean, what brought me to history was kind of a series of chances, really. It's partly us surrounded by people who love history. My grandma taught history, and my sister is a historian and works in a museum. I think my parents were a bit miffed because they both met at university studying geography, and then both me and my sister have ended up doing history instead. So when I was at school for a long time, I wanted to be an architect. So the subjects I chose were kind of all based around that, so like maths, physics, and art. And then the kind of fourth one that I did was classics, purely because it was a really fun teacher, Mr. Pegler, and I just always enjoyed the lessons. History itself is one of those things where I think I enjoyed it at uni, but it's only afterwards that I've really started enjoying it more and kind of getting more into it, because the whole system of education is very suited to, you know, a certain way of learning, where looking back now and it's like history is, seeing history as more this like dynamic changing story where you're kind of learning about the humanity of other periods and, you know, other people's experiences, I think is just so beautiful and amazing in a way that dry dates and stuff just aren't necessarily.
Yeah, really good way of putting it. I dig that. That's awesome.
Thank you. I think that's one of the great things about Old World as well is, you know, it's injecting this humanity, even though you're kind of playing, you know, a leader, so kind of the very top of a society, it's still, you know, ancient history, especially most of what we see is these, or what we imagine when we think about it is, you know, these kind of very noble statues and stuff, and just knowing that it was very real people kind of living their lives, making mistakes. I think that's just something really beautiful about it.
Josh, you got me in the feels, man. That sounds pretty poetic. I like that a lot. It's very awesome. Going back to your previous mention of Summer Johnson, were you familiar with his history, and then B, like the genre itself? Were you somebody who's a fan of it?
Yeah, to an extent. I played Civ 4 a bit when younger, but I think I was 10 at the time. So basically, I wasn't a very smart kid. I did not do well at that game. but then I kind of, got into like grand strategy games for a long time. And like strategy's always been kind of what I play for, you know, enjoyment, really. And then, kind of recently, kind of got more into both like 4X again as a genre. And yes, like there's been like this kind of renaissance really recently of you know, kind of storytelling and games, and especially strategy games with like Crusader Kings and kind of the amazing stuff Paradox has done of kind of having this like very dynamic story and really combining story and gameplay.
Yeah, and that's where I think it's kind of cool to have David's history here, because I genuinely think that what Mohawk Games is trying to do is kind of mesh what, you know, some of the best of what 4X has been doing with some of the best of what the grand strategy genre has been doing, especially particularly the Paradox games with Crusader Kings. And I mean, is that kind of what you guys have been trying to attempt to achieve, is a storytelling in the vein of maybe a Crusader Kings game?
We're doing similar things, but not quite. I don't think characters have quite the same degree of importance in the Old World as they do in Crusader Kings, mostly just because we have a more solid strategy base, I think, and the characters are kind of an extra layer on top of it. They're not quite as interwoven.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, as you're writing things, though, are you both responsible for writing general events, or are they character events, or are they both?
A bit of both, really. I've mostly done a mix of character events and kind of interstate versions. I think Josh has done character events and a lot of religious stuff, but he can probably tell you more about that.
Yeah, I think it's a mix. So I mean, sometimes you have a task which is, you know, we need X events based on if this happens, and it's very much coming from, you know, kind of filling like a gameplay hole or a narrative kind of gap. And sometimes it's just you read something really interesting, or, you know, when researching, you find something that's like, well, this has to go in.
Right, yeah, and that's what I like about Old World 2, is that a lot of the events are historically based, right? Maybe not to a T, right? But they have some influence from history. Are you looking through books and reading books and maybe calling upon your education history to kind of pull some of these events together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I did dust out my old uni notes, which I was quite impressed with how many I actually took. To be honest, it's more than I was expecting to find. But yeah, no, it's absolutely a huge part of it, because I think it's a mix of, you don't want to become so entrenched in details that you don't leave room for the player to have their own route and to, you know, kind of find the fun in the game. But at the same time, like having details and elements of history you can put in, it's, I think it can just be really powerful. I mean, it's kind of part of what first got me into history was playing like ancient mythology and civilization and stuff. So it feels a bit full circle, really.
Yeah, that was actually going to be one of my next questions, is just about like the time period itself with the classical era. Is that something that has always interested you, or did you take more of an interest in it now that you've been here with Old World?
It's always interested me. So I'm the degree was in ancient history, so it was specifically classics, mostly looking at Egypt. So it's very much that time period, which I found interesting.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I feel like this role is meant for you, Josh. That's great stuff. Excellent. Well, coming back to you, David. So you were with Paradox for a while, and then, you know, you took what was going to be your sabbatical and the opportunity to go travel, but COVID put a huge damper on that. Were you looking for jobs then at that point once COVID hit, or were you trying to do your best to do at least a little bit of traveling? How did that go for you?
I didn't really get any traveling done, unfortunately, but what I ended up doing instead is getting a dog, which I'd wanted to do for a while after my previous dog died, and it was nice to not have to go to work while taking care of a young puppy.
Yeah, that's great. What kind of dog did you get?
A Borzoi.
Awesome. Yeah, great. So the dog, a boy or girl?
A girl.
Oh, yeah. So I've grown up with female dogs my whole life. I love them. And yeah, that's great stuff. So then you, of course, spend your time bonding with your new puppy. And then I imagine at some point you're like, all right, well, I've got to start working again. So what made you come to Mohawk?
It was actually the other way around. I found Old World in Early Access on the Epic Store, and I thought it looked cool. And then I bought it, downloaded it, played it for a while, and then I thought, you know what, I could probably make some good events for this game. So I hopped on Discord and I sent a message to Soran saying, do you need any writers? I used to work at Paradox. I used to work in Crusader Kings 2, and Civilization 4 was my favourite Civ game. And it seems like you're making a kind of a mix between Civ 4 and CK2, and I think that's cool and I'd like to work on it. And he said, well, you have to talk to Rhea, who's the hiring manager and the head writer. And I actually took a couple of weeks before I got back to her, because I wasn't quite sure. Like, I thought it was a bit audacious just asking for a job. But I ended up writing to her, and she wrote me back, and we had an interview, and then I got hired. So it all worked out pretty well.
Yeah, that kind of was, first of all, it's awesome way to get it. And second of all, yeah, and that's something I've really noticed about Layla, is that she's actually much more approachable than you'd expect. So that's great stuff. I'm glad she saw the value in what you could bring.
Yeah, same.
Well, great. So back to you, Josh, for just a second. And I'm curious to know, like, I mean, at this point in the development process, have you guys gotten to the point where you've written most of the things that you're going to write? I mean, you're only a few weeks away. Are there, you know, many more events that you're trying to write, or are you kind of wrapping things up in regards to that?
In terms of new events, before the 1.0 release, we are done with adding new ones. Maybe sneaking in a cheeky one or two, if possible. But we're going through and reviewing all the just under 3,000 events that are in there at the moment.
Especially what, over 3,000 events.
Oh yeah, sorry, over 3,000 events.
My hat's off to you guys. I mean, I can't even imagine writing that many events. And then it seems like, as I'm playing though, that somehow you've managed to make them all feel connected, right? Like, and that's something that's really impressive, because I think that when you start to have that many events, I would expect there to be some sort of, you know, maybe inconsistencies and stuff like that. But you guys have really kind of felt like it all feels like it's being written by the same person.
And I think that's one of the huge advantages of...
Yeah, it's one of the nice things about Early Access.
I was going to say the same thing. Yeah, Early Access, really. Like, we've been able to, you know, tweak as we go, both the actual writing and, you know, being able to have, like, the analytics and see kind of what choices people are making, so just the actual gameplay effects as well. It's just a huge benefit, really.
Yeah, and you know what's funny too is recently there was a message on Discord where there was a question about one of the events, because the phrasing of it was something that was very British. And I believe it was something like taken ill or something like that. I don't remember the exact phrasing, but it was something that, as Americans, a few of us there in the testing group there, we're all like, wow, this doesn't read right in American. But of course, we aren't the center of the world. But it was just funny, because we'd all just agreed at that point that one of the writers has to be British, and it turns out two of them are in the same like general area. But yeah, so that's great stuff. I mean, like I said, it takes a lot to keep the tone and to keep the writing style consistent, especially when you have multiple writers. And I think you guys have done a great job of that. So now I want to come back to maybe some personal stuff. Maybe David, if you wouldn't mind telling me a little bit about like, what do you do outside of writing and outside of developing games?
Oh, not much. No, I'm just kidding.
All right, there it goes. Josh, your turn.
Just to go back to your previous point, though, one of the great torments I find, and maybe Josh agrees, as a British writer in video games, is having to use American spelling basically all the time. It's terrible.
I'm sorry that we spelled things correctly. My bad. No, you know, it gets me too. You guys use OU, like, for, let's just say armor, right? Like, you use ARMOUR, and it always messes me up because I'm like, well, yeah, I guess that works too. Like, why did we take out the U? I don't get it.
I think the joke is the British person asks why they took out, why they're taking out letters, and the American replies are, we're getting rid of you.
There you go. Exactly. So, all right, well, now that you've dug at us a little bit there, David, I appreciate it. what do you do for your spare time?
Well, like I mentioned, I have a dog, so I try to take her out on walks and play with her and things along those lines. As well as that, I play a lot of video games, mostly strategy games, but sometimes other things. Like, obviously, I still play Paradox games. I've been playing a bit of Stars with Nemesis recently, as well as read a lot of books, mostly fantasy, sci-fi, and sometimes history.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that's my jam right there. That's, you know, what I've realized as I get older, and I've got kids now too, so it's just easier for me to play a game like that, because a lot of times strategy games are games that you can quit at any point, right? You can just save wherever you're at and move on. So, you know, if the kids are burning the house down, I can quickly save my game of Old World and move on. But, you know, not the same with a first person shooter when you're not at a save point or something like that. So yeah, I really enjoy those types of games too. So what about you, Josh? What's something you do in your spare time that you really enjoy?
Yeah, I'm a lot similar, really. A lot of reading, playing games, designing games, I'm in previous times, like going out to galleries, doing hiking, stuff like that, really.
Awesome. What kind of books are you interested in?
Recently, it's been I've been getting into short stories a lot more, which I've never really tried before, but then I find I'm terrible recently at actually starting and, well, getting all the way through a book. So having a much shorter story is just, I know, much more digestible, really.
I think as we become older, kind of lean more into our busy lives, it's hard for us to, yeah, I have a hard time too. I've got a weird limit for books where if it's more than 400 pages, I almost never finish it, which is a shame because I feel like there's a lot of books that I'm missing out on, but it's like this weird mental block that if it's like, you know, 400 plus, I just, you know, I get to like 300 pages and I'm done. But it's something about being at the 300 page mark that if I know I only have 100 pages left, I'm going to finish it. But if it's like another 200-300 pages, yeah, I'm checking out. So great stuff. I mean, what kind of video games are you into? Are you in the strategy games as well?
Yeah, strategy games, play a lot of just kind of any, I know it depends on what for, really. So I play a lot of indie, like narrative type things.
Right, and we're actually recording this during E3, which I'm assuming you guys are both at least moderately interested in, right?
Yeah, I feel about.
For a second, I thought I was going to get crickets. I was like, oh, that didn't go over well. Well, I mean, there's going to be some strategy game. I mean, I'm like you, Josh. I really enjoy the strategy genre, but I'm someone who enjoys every game, right? I enjoy a bunch of different genres for a bunch of different reasons, and sometimes it is to just turn that brain off, right? And just mindlessly, you know, like, well, Overwatch isn't really mindless either, but sometimes I just want to play a Doom, you know, and shoot things.
Yeah, it's nice to just have a mix.
Great stuff. Well, so let me ask you guys, because I know things are different over there, and particularly because you both live in two different countries now. Josh, how has the COVID pandemic affected your life? I mean, how has England responded, and how strict have they been regarding like going out? And, you know, where are you guys now as far as recovery?
How rude am I allowed to be about my government?
As rude as you want. I don't think there's anybody here that's going to say it reports you or anything.
It would have been better handled is what I'll say. I'm personally, I've been incredibly lucky, really. It's affected things in my personal life, drastically. When at the start of lockdown and COVID and everything, it was kind of part of the Three Knots Indie Studio. And it's just a lot's changed over the last year, really. Seeing that close, but then finding a new job and moving into that, it's been just a huge life shift. But I'm really fortunate that I've not had any. I'm just very fortunate, really.
No, that's great to hear. Yeah, I mean, sometimes people have been able to say, there have been people in my life that have been dramatically changed by the COVID-19, either by the virus itself or by the response to it. So, if you feel like you really kind of skated out, that's great. And that, I mean, it's certainly, and I feel like that's probably the truth for most people, right? Like, I don't think that, I mean, aside from having to do some things differently, I don't think most people have had to dramatically change their life.
I was just going to say, I think games is a very, as a industry and as a whole, games has got off pretty well out of it. So I think it's a bit of confirmation bias as well there.
Yeah, we've been so lucky that we can all work remote in games. Especially at Mohawk, I guess Josh did have problems. But I would hate to be working in an in-person industry. We'd have a very different experience of that in the case.
Well, have you, David, been personally affected by the vaccine? Personally affected by the pandemic? I mean, has your personal life changed at all? Your personal habits or maybe your, routines or anything? Have that been changed?
Not too much. I mean, like I mentioned, I did, have to cancel the idea of traveling for a while. But that aside, and just day-to-day life, it's hardly changed for me. When I got the job at Mohawk, we were remote instantly, of course, because, we're in a different country. Most of the time when I go outside, it's to take my dog for a walk in the woods, so I don't really have to interact with people too much. And if COVID wasn't going on, I still wouldn't be able to go out very much, because having a fairly young dog doesn't give you a lot of time. It's like having a young child. You can't really go out for whole nights having parties or anything.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong. I don't remember if it was... I knew it was a Scandinavian country, so I might be speaking from ignorance here, but was Sweden the one that kind of took a pretty hands-off approach to the lockdowns and stuff like that?
Yes, there's been very, very utter lockdowns. There's been recommendations not to fall in groups and stuff, and some public meetings were broken up, but for the most part, it's pretty much been try to stay away from people and work from home if you can, and that's been about the extent of it.
Right. Okay. So yeah, it's weird how very different each of our countries have attempted to quell this. And I mean, here I feel like we're kind of starting to round the corner. Are you guys feeling that too?
I feel like America is definitely starting to turn the corner with your vaccination rates. And I think Britain's doing okay as well, but Sweden's very behind the vaccinations. Where I'm living just now, it's still only people who are over 60 have been vaccinated. Whereas I've seen in various different American states, you can pretty much just get a vaccine whenever you want these days. And I think Josh also got a vaccination recently as well.
Yeah, it's just changed the other day, so it's over 25
here. Yeah, here I've been vaccinated personally since March, and the majority of people here that I know of in my social circles have been vaccinated for at least a couple months. So that's pretty interesting. Yeah, I mean, I understand, America's buying power is a bit different, so I know that they probably bought all the vaccines and just kept them. So, but yeah, it's different because for us here, we are rounding the corner with vaccinations, and I know we're not anywhere close to what they call herd immunity, but it does feel like life's starting to return to normal, and that for me, it's quite a weight off our shoulder, I'm sure. So, anything else you guys want to talk about?
I never really answered about where I live in Sweden. I don't know if anybody listening is going to be interested. I lived in Stockholm for most of the time, but just in December this year, I moved to a place called Östersund, which is quite far north. Well, it's quite far north compared to most places. It's only about halfway up Sweden, but Sweden's a very wrong country. And it's interesting because I'm far enough north that it doesn't really get dark at this time of year. It gets kind of dark for about 2 hours or at midnight, but aside from that, it's almost 24-hour sun.
Oh my God, that's so cool, actually. I really, I've heard of places like that. I've seen, you know, pictures and stuff like that. I didn't realize that somewhere like that was actually in a first world country. So how is that? Like, how do you sleep?
It's rocky for me. I'm not too affected by it being light when I'm sleeping. But a lot of people buy very thick kind of blackout curtains and just artificially make it dark in the house.
And I imagine it gets really cold, though.
In the winter, yeah. It was interesting because it's the coldest place I've ever lived. I think it got to minus 26, but that's in centigrade.
Oh, God.
Centigrade Celsius.
Jeez. I know they eventually kind of start to match up, and I think it's around there, but that's super cold. I mean, is it snow cold or is it just cold?
I mean, both. We had about, I think at times the snow was about thigh deep in me, and I'm 6 feet tall, and it snows and melts and snows and melts, and then the snow starts building up. And the snow here, the piles that were proud of the roads only just melted a few weeks ago.
Oh, wow. So what's the weather like there now? Like, what kind of temperatures are you seeing?
Just now, it's quite warm. I had all my fans on there because it was too hot, but it's about 24 degrees just now.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's about what it is here in the United States. So,
yeah. I'm just checking. Minus 26 C is minus 15 F.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, that's cold. That's super cold. Wow. I've been in temperatures that low a few times in my life, and nothing in me wanted to be a part of that ever again.
Well, I don't mind it too much, but it's been an interesting change. I've been used to being not wearing half to dressing for the cold, and being kind of, I'm always that guy that's not wearing the jacket when it's snowy outside. But moving up here, it's not feasible. You go outside and like your face instantly starts to hurt, and if you get sweaty, your sweat can freeze to your skin. It's interesting.
God, yeah, that is not a life for me. But more proud to you. I would love personally to visit a place like that. I just don't think I could live there. Well, Josh, what is it like there for you? I imagine because you're roughly on the same latitude line for me, I think, because I'm right outside DC, so I you're maybe just a few latitude degrees north from me.
Yeah, I mean, it's warm here too at the moment. Britain's getting one of its 2 weeks of summer.
Right. Yeah. The great thing about where I live, and this is again the Washington DC metro area, we have all four seasons. So you know we're starting to get pretty hot, and you know we'll stay hot until like the end of August or you know early September, and then it starts to cool off a bit, but. It's nice to have all four seasons and build up. And, you know, the last few years, unfortunately, our spring and fall has been much shorter. You know, you get the month or month and a half of cooler weather in those two times. But, you know, we jumped right into summer pretty quickly this year. So, well, great. I mean, so there's, you know, I really appreciate you guys taking the time out of your day. You guys have been doing great work. I you know, I don't know how often you guys hear that because, you know, I don't know how connected to you, to the community you guys are, but for me personally, as someone who's been playing Old World from the very beginning, it's been really fun and really exciting to see the additions of new events. And again, that they all feel cohesive is a real feat. I mean, I know that you guys all probably have, you know, somewhat different writing styles, but for you guys to have been able to come together and create a consistent writing style throughout the whole game is really great. So you guys have done great work. Thanks, David, for being here. I really appreciate it. Do you have any socials or anything that anybody could find you on?
I don't really have enough. No, I'm not a big social media user.
All right. Well, David is in the deep parts of Sweden with no socials. He does not want to be found. Don't look for him. But what about you, Josh?
I'm on Twitter if you search my name.
Excellent. Yeah, well, put that in the description below. And guys, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, David, for being here. I really appreciate getting to know you, and best of luck with the rest of the development.
Thank you.
And Josh, again, the same thing. I really appreciate you being here. It's been great to get to know you guys, and best of luck as you guys wrap things up here.
Thanks for taking time to talk to us.
It has been an honor and a pleasure.